The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
What is Derrick Henry worth in Dynasty Trades? Looking at some May average draft position on NFC. And of course, giving you the latest around the NFL with the best fantasy football podcast around. I'm Clint Capella. That's John Collins. That's Trey Young. We are the Atlanta Hawks. No, we are the Fantasy Football Today crew. Our buddy Adam Mazur not here. He's a little salty over the Knicks losing to the Hawks in the first game of the first round of the NBA playoffs. Obviously, I'm Jamie. That's Dave. That's Heath. And we got a lot to get to and a fun show for you today. Before we get into the trades that are going on in our Dynasty Rookie Only Draft, we're going to talk about some early look. We're May, so it's early. So a look at the NFC average draft position. Before we get into that, Heath, give me a quick explanation about what NFC is and what this average draft position is from.
Yeah, what NFC actually stands for is National Fantasy Championship, and they run contests worth lots of dollars to be the best fantasy player on their site. And they have best ball contests. They have super flex contests. The ADP we're using today is basically all drafts that they have hosted since the beginning of May that do not include auctions. So it includes best ball ADP. It includes super flex ADP. And so the important thing to remember is when we're talking about quarterbacks, it's probably more important where the quarterback is being drafted amongst the quarterbacks as opposed to where the quarterback is being drafted in terms of round value.
So, Dave, who's your favorite player right now to draft based on the NFC ADP in May?
I love the value that you can get on Chase Claypool, where you can draft him well outside of the top 24 at wide receivers. His ADP is right around 70th overall, so that's a round six pick. And I know there's a lot of mouths to feed in that Steelers offense. I know they're talking about changing it up, and they have to change up after what they did last year. But they drew up designer plays just for Chase Claypool in the red zone and out of the red zone. I think they do more of that. I think his size-speed combination is going to give defenses a lot of trouble, and I think Roethlisberger likes receivers like that. So I think he's one I'm targeting if I can get him in late round six.
He is the number 27 wide receiver off the board again, according to the NFC ADP. Some wide receivers going ahead of him. Brandon Ayuk at 24, Cooper Kupp 25, Tyler Lockett 26. Some guys going just after him. Ja'Marr Chase, Juju Smith-Schuster, DJ Chark. Is he your favorite Steelers wide receiver?
He is a non-PPR. In full PPR, I can't pull the trigger on it. I'll still take Deontay first.
Heath, who's your favorite Steelers wide receiver?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Deontay, I believe, in both, actually. And Claypool, I think, is third for me in both formats. It's going to be really interesting to see how they divide up the targets because Claypool has to see a boost in his target share from last year because we know the touchdown regression is coming. He's not going to score on 9% of his targets. So he needs to see his targets go up and either Juju's or Deontay's go down. I'm not really projecting that right now.
And obviously a lot of his production came in a couple of games last year, so we'll see if Claypool can spread it out a little bit more over the course of the season. Heath, who is your favorite player based on the ADP right now?
I feel like this has to be an error, and I'm going to say it, and someone's going to tell me why it's not actually this, but Taysom Hill is the number 30 quarterback being drafted, and we talk about it all the time, and maybe the two quarterback thing factors into this a little bit, but in a one quarterback league, once you get past the top, I would say 10 or 11, maybe it's 12 or 13, really all you should care about is upside. Their floor doesn't matter at that point. And Taysom Hill, if he wins the starting job, we don't really know. I think the betting markets have Jameis Winston as a slight favorite, but Sean Payton's the only one who really matters. If he wins that job, he has top six upside. We saw that when he played last year. And so he's going behind a handful of quarterbacks that I don't want even in two quarterback leagues, really. So that is my favorite value.
And did you see the quarterback ADPs just across the board? They're a lot higher than I would expect them to be. it seems like in the NFCs, people are kind of going a little reachy for quarterback.
Well, that's because this includes best ball and super flex or two QB drafts. This is all drafts they've hosted.
Okay. That's fine. And so obviously in super flex, quarterbacks are going to go higher, but in best ball, Heath, your experience is that quarterbacks tend to go sooner there.
Second quarterbacks definitely go sooner.
That I get.
So it kind of pushes everything up, I think.
Yeah, but then why is Taysom Hill still so far down? Just because he doesn't have a job.
Well, I mean, it's interesting when you look at the guys that are around him. First off, Jameis Winston's at 25, so both Saints quarterbacks are clearly relatively low going after what would be the starting group, 24 quarterbacks in a 12-team league, whether it's one quarterback or two quarterbacks. They're in the third group. If it's a one-quarterback league, it's then they're in the second group. If they're in a two-quarterback league, as the third quarterback. But guys that are going around Taysom Hill, the three guys ahead of him, Zach Wilson, Sam Darnold, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and the three guys after him, Jimmy Garoppolo, Cam Newton, and Trey Lance. So if you do wait on quarterback and you end up with a couple of these guys and they end up as starters, whether it's the 49ers pair or getting Taysom Hill as the Saints starter, you could be in really good shape. Knowing what Taysom Hill did as a starter during that stretch of games that he started for Drew Brees last year when he was out with the rib injury. So we're going to get into a lot more ADP conversation, quarterbacks, different positions as well. But there's Dave's favorite guy, Chase Claypool, Heath's favorite guy, Taysom Hill. Maybe the guys will talk a little bit more about some ADP conversation tomorrow as we're live on the FFT YouTube channel Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, answering all of your questions and getting through some of more of the schedule conversation, looking at some of the things that have happened following the NFL draft, maybe talking about the Tampa Bay running back situation, some news going on there. Ronald Jones, Leonard Fournette still going to be a part of the top duo for Tampa Bay's backfield, but they'll get into some dynasty conversation as well. You can talk to Adam, Heath, and Chris at youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, and they will be answering all of your questions. Again, that's youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. Subscribe to the channel, turn notifications on so you know exactly when they're live, when we're live, and we'll be able to talk to you tomorrow, YouTube, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. That's Adam, Heath, and Chris. I'm sure Heath
it's
will
a blast.
Have some fun food conversation going on as well. That's dinner time for most people. Heath will have eaten his dinner, I'm sure, at 5 p.m. Yep. After getting through some of that stuff.
It'll probably have been in his smoker for the previous 24 hours before that.
I started to catch some flack from people like talking about how I live in South Florida. And so now I eat the early bird special for dinner. But the new fad is the intermittent fasting. I'm calling it the intermittent fasting dinner. So you eat earlier so that you can still have breakfast the next day.
Yeah that's good, what you have to do. But it's got to be like a 5 p.m. dinner, like super early bird for that.
5 to 5:30 most days.
Okay, that's fine. And that's good. And then you're just not eating between as soon as you're done with dinner until breakfast the next day. If you're a breakfast person, that's the way you have to do intermittent fasting.
So it's good that you're spinning that because I want to hear you're going to spin this Derrick Henry trade that you made in our rookie-only draft. So we're in the middle of, I think we just started round three, or are we just at the end of round two? I don't even know where we are at this point.
I believe we are at the start of round three, and we got six three. Rounds. So
this has been going on for about a week.
Yeah.
It's a 14-team league. Dave won the league last year. I won at the league
before. Right.
Dave beat Heath in the championship game last year. And so Dave's got a great team. I think my team's pretty good. Heath had a great team, but he has now decided to strip its parts and sell. And so there's been some trades going on. And I think both you guys made some really good trades. Dave, I think your trades were fantastic in the moves that you made. Heath, I think most of the trades that you made were fantastic, but I got to give you a hard time about the Derrick Henry one. So that's one that I've actually not the commissioner. Just somebody plays in the league. People have been texting me. What is he doing trading Derrick Henry
for
109 and 209? So ninth overall and 23rd overall. I don't think you got enough for Derrick Henry, but just explain your thought process with this team and what you're doing.
Here's the problem. I've had Derrick Henry on the trade block for a calendar year. And I got a text this morning from one of our league mates saying, how did you trade Derrick Henry for that much? I would have given you so much more. I've sent the guy four emails in the past year, and he's not made one offer for Derrick Henry. I've received a handful, maybe seven or eight offers.
I offered you a first-round pick for him last year.
I did too.
But your picks are going to suck every year in this league. Yes. There are six or seven teams that are going to have the first six or seven picks almost every year, and you guys are going to be in the last four picks. I often am as well. And in a 14-team league, pick 11 through 14 is not exciting. Now, pick 9 is not exciting. What changed the math this year and it worked out so well, was Devontae Smith, who I go back and forth whether he's my number four, my number five, or my number six favorite player in this class, was still available at 1.9. I would not have, before the draft, traded Derrick Henry for this package. No way, no hell. I still didn't really love it, but you said I had a great team. I didn't have a great team. I snuck into the playoffs last year with a losing record and then won my way into the championship game. And it was a team that was built around Derrick Henry, Melvin Gordon as my starting running backs. I had Myles Gaskin, who also did not draw a lot of appeal until I was able to trade him later in the draft. I really was afraid that I had a roster that a year from now, Derrick Henry finally has his first big injury, and I don't have really any tradable assets.
Right.
So I tore the whole thing down. I don't think I got enough for Derrick Henry. I got the most that I could.
I think if you're trading, the only thing that I would disagree with is you needed to get, I think, if not a first round pick next year, a second round pick thrown into it next year as well. Like something to help you next year.
Because, so a one, a two, and another two?
Yeah. Or if not a one and a one. Because like, I'll just give you an example. I was having a conversation with another manager about a running back in the same range with Nick. It was Nick Chubb. So you guys figure out who it was. And he was asking in return two firsts. And I was like, I didn't want to part with two firsts personally at the time. But it was something that I was considering. If you're going to trade one of these caliber of players, and Henry's in that conversation, caliber players, superstar caliber players. And if you're in a rebuild mode, I think you got to get something close to a top 20 overall pick next year, if not in the top 10.
Sure. But to Heath's point, what if he's been trying to do that for the longest time and just no one's biting because everybody figures what Heath's figuring, which is Derrick Henry ain't going to do this forever. Eventually he's going to take on an injury and he's going to be gone. Or the Titans will change their philosophy. It might not be for two more years or something like that. But Heath's perspective really changes the dynamic here.
It appears there was the same perspective you guys had, because you guys neither one offered two firsts for Derrick Henry. I think
that's true.
And again, I'll only speak for myself. It's looking at the long term versus the short term, and my team is very much ready to win now. Derrick Henry, I think, puts it over the top, but did I want to sacrifice next year's draft capital on top of that? So it is a tough spot. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is just trading in general when you are in a rebuild mode. Do you need to get more first round capital next year? Like, Dave, you went through this, mm-hmm. I think 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And you got a lot of first round capital.
Right. What Heath was saying about Derrick Henry and trying to hurry up and trade him before he goes bad, it was giving me flashbacks to when I had Le'Veon Bell. And it was before Le'Veon Bell turned into a pile of poo. And now, I don't even know if he's rostered in this dynasty league. He still might be to the team I traded him for. But I traded Bell in a package to get a one. And then I traded somebody else to get a one. I had three first-round picks last year. And it made all the difference in the world. Yeah, I won the championship right after that. So combination of just getting lucky with a couple of other picks in my prior 2 years of drafting, really working hard on the waiver wire. And then, I think the first round picks last year were Cam Akers, Joe Burrow, and CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, one of those was yours, obviously.
Yes, the first one was mine. I had a fourth pick.
So, that to me is how you go about a rebuild. Like, Heath, I think right now you just have your own first round pick, right?
Right.
And no other tradable assets unless you're parting with Patrick Mahomes.
No, but I
to get,
I
also, to get a like, first round pick back.
I did not get just Devontae Smith either. I used that 2.9 to move back up.
No, I'm going to get to your other trades. But
right.
And like I said, I think your other trades are fantastic. This one is questionable. It's not bad. It's just questionable of the return for Derrick Henry. So the other trades that you made, you traded Myles Gaskin for a first, which I think is a steal. I don't know if Myles Gaskin is worth a first.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yep. You offered me the same deal, and I was picking an 11, and I said no. Your other trade, you gave up Melvin Gordon for 16th overall. Another great trade. Had Melvin Gordon still been on your team and I was up at 25, I would have probably offered 25 for Melvin Gordon at that point, but 16 overall, great trade. And then you traded T.Y. Hilton, Hunter Henry, and 23rd overall, which is part of the package that you got for Derrick Henry, for 15th overall. So you got two picks in the top 15. And so the receivers that you came out with, and they were all receivers, you came out with Devontae Smith, Rondell Moore, and Elijah Moore, correct?
And Kadarius Toney.
So those are your four picks essentially for Derrick Henry and all the things that you've done to trade. So you have a good receiving core going into next year, presumably, if all these guys do hit, and Devontae Smith at number 9 is a steal.
If all these guys hit, Heath's going to win the league soon. I think your goal is to have two of them really hit.
Two of them top 15 would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Dave, your trades, just bring in what you did as well. You made a couple of moves.
Is this just during the draft or anything before the draft? Because
both trades that you made involving rookie picks and the moves that you made. So you gave up Chris Carson, Carson Wentz, N'Keal Harry, and Tyron Johnson, plus your round two 16th overall pick, which ended up going to Heath. You gave up round four, which 56th overall, and round five, 70th overall, and you got back DeAndre Hopkins, Eric Kendricks. This is an IDP league as well. And the 45th overall pick in the fourth round. So you basically gave up Chris Carson, Carson Wentz, and some draft capital to get DeAndre Hopkins.
Right, and the best draft capital there was 16th overall, so 202 in the draft. Whenever you guys don't know this, I'll tell you this. I do a lot of work before our draft in this league. I've got a whole spreadsheet laid out. I mock it. I make a list of what are my goals? What do I really need to improve? And I just won the championship. So it's not like my team needed a lot of things, but I wanted to get a building block at wide receiver and I wanted to get a young running back. I think I'm going to get at least one young running back every single rookie only draft that I'm in. It's the reason why I took Akers last year instead of Judy with CeeDee Lamb to load up on wide receivers last year. Yes, at one point, Jerry Jeudy was somebody that we actually wanted to draft. And the manager that had DeAndre Hopkins wanted to move him. And he came to me, and I put together a package. He really needed a running back. And, I talked about having the fear of not getting good value for Le'Veon once upon a time. I was getting decent value here for Chris Carson, who honestly could be a role player by the second half of this coming season. And I love Chris Carson. But I was able to get some pretty good value for him. Hopkins is 29. I think he can still play well for at least three more seasons. And so I didn't get a young receiver to help my team out, but I bolstered a roster spot by getting DeAndre Hopkins.
Well, I mean, again, your team is ready to win now based on what you did a year ago. I wonder, though, just want to ask you.
Yeah.
If the manager had asked you for Cam Akers instead, would you have done
it? No. Akers is basically untouchable, and I've had more than one person ask about Akers. And I've just,
because again,
you have to give up the farm for him,
but DeAndre Hopkins is still in the farm, I think,
and I gave up a lot for him
manager. Well, basically one starter. He got Chris Carson and 16 overall. So,
well, and I think Wentz has a chance to rebound. I think he's a good guy to speculate on. Harry and Johnson
You won the trade. So I'm just looking at it from the other owner's perspective. He's in a rebuilding situation, and Chris Carson to me is not a rebuilding type of player. He should have been, making this a hard sell to try and get somebody a little bit younger.
He should have tried to go after Tony Pollard. Like, I've got Pollard on my bench.
Yeah, I would have wanted more for DeAndre Hopkins personally.
Yeah.
Your second trade that you made, you said you want to get a young running back, so you traded Gabriel Davis, your 14th overall pick in round one, and round four, 45th overall, to get to number 10, and you got a round six pick in return, and you got Michael Carter with that pick.
And I just watched the running backs fall in the draft, and I figured that the fantasy manager picking at number 11 would be all over Michael Carter. And I knew that if I didn't move up, I'd be stuck taking Kenneth Gainwell at 14th overall. And I say getting stuck. Gainwell's got some appeal. Half PPR league, he could end up being a passing downs guy in Philadelphia with a chance to be more than that eventually. But given the opportunity to jump up to 10, to get Michael Carter, who I think does have a chance to be a little bit better than Gainwell over the course of his career. And I wanted to get a young running back. I want to keep churning those young running backs in Dynasty. I had to do it. I love Gabriel Davis, man. I think he's got some awesome potential. Took him in round six last year. And so the way I put it in my head, because I didn't like getting rid of Davis, was, all right, a 6-round pick last year to move up four spots, piece of cake. Let's just do it. And so I did it, and I got Carter.
It's a good trade. It's a good trade. I was hoping Carter would slip.
I know it.
So I ended up taking Terrace Marshall. I think Heath wanted Terrace Marshall at 11, where I took him. I think that's when you traded into 12, Heath, to get the Myles Gaskin trade. So there's some trades that we made in some of our
leagues. By the way, let me just say, I'm so happy that there are so many trades going on in this Dynasty League, because I know of other people's Dynasty Leagues where people just hate trading. And there's like one or two managers that try and like stir the pot and get all the trades going. And everybody else in the league just sits on their hands, and it's annoying. So if you're one of those fantasy dynasty managers that just doesn't like to make trades, you're adverse to it, you don't want to get ripped off, at least be open to the conversation. Talk about it. Write it out at some point when you get an offer that goes, hey, maybe I'll take this. But be open to trading. And that goes for everybody in redraft too.
So just to wrap up our little trade conversation here, there's another trade that I think will probably be announced at some point in our Dynasty League. It's a pretty big one that was agreed to in principle via text. And now one of those managers is not backing out, but hesitating a little bit after thinking about it over the weekend. So as commissioners or as people that just play in fantasy, when you have a deal that is agreed to in principle, however it's done, text, phone, email, face-to-face, should that be considered binding?
No.
Yeah, like, it's not. No's the correct answer, but it's like the other person should be openly harassed and we should say their name on the podcast and make fun of them. But no, it's not binding.
But when they're two friends, it's obviously something. It's getting very contentious, I can tell you.
Oh, I bet.
I posted a poll on this. Two people agree to a trade via text in the fantasy league. Is that agreement official? So far out of 5,600 votes, and this is less than an hour already. So everybody's a little interested in this one. So 49% say yes, 49.4% say yes, 43.4% say no, 7.2% see results. So be interesting to see how this one comes out. But it's a text chain with three other people. Two of them are fighting. The fourth one is I'm just sitting back and watching. And
the right, but the other one's probably stirring the pot.
Oh, well, no, are you guys really fighting over a fantasy trade? Are you really that childish? And it's interesting. I'm sure
a lot
of
people. I can name
guys...
the people now.
Yeah, me too.
I did another Twitter. There we go. I have, because we had this same discussion. I think we're going to have a problem in this league. So I just got one more thing about the league because it was a hot button issue as I was making these trades and tearing my team down. As you mentioned, Jamie, I do have Patrick Mahomes. And what I had asked was basically, do I have to start Patrick Mahomes if I have another quarterback who is active and playing? And Dave asked this question in this very same league, I think 2 years ago, and I'm the commissioner, yep. And it asked me, what is the rule about lineup? Do I have to start my best player? Do I have to start an active player? And my rule as a commissioner has always been, you must start a player who is active for their game. Not on a bye, not on injured reserve. You must start active players. But I'm not going to tell you who the best player in your team is or who you have to start. Now, it's obvious, a little more obvious with Patrick Mahomes and a crappy backup quarterback. Are people going to get mad at me for not starting Patrick Mahomes this year?
I think what you're going to run into is whenever someone's playing you, they're not going to be upset. the 12 other people in the league are going to look at that and say, what is he doing? Especially as it gets later in the season and you're either helping or hurting somebody from getting into the playoffs by maybe playing Patrick Mahomes or not. I'm going to go out on a limb and say you have the worst roster right now in the league.
That's what I'm going for. I don't want to tank and then end up with a fifth pick.
Right.
Yeah, right. You don't want that.
But I don't think Mahomes are you going play to play that for you one way or the other.
Are you going? Well, you never know.
Mahomes had the best game of his season last year and he lost because he played against me and I had Tyreek Hill and Tyreek Hill was the reason why.
Yeah, I'm going to play six games are you this year do against it? Bad teams.
Are you going to bench him every game this year?
I think that's the key distinction. I can't, right.
Like
I
if you rename your team name is Patrick is Mahomes, you need to change your team name to Patrick is not Mahomes, and then you're not going to put him in your lineup at all, and then that's fair for everybody. But you got to commit to it.
Well, first I have to find a backup quarterback.
Yeah, I wish I had one to trade you. Honestly, I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's illegal. It's not an illegal roster, right? Your roster's legal if you start, Jake Luton at quarterback.
No, if he's playing Chad Henne over Patrick Mahomes, then we have a problem. If he's playing, you know, I saw your Twitter question. It was Zach Wilson over Patrick Mahomes. You don't have Zach Wilson, but
right.
You know, if it was somebody along those lines, the 30th best quarterback in the NFL.
Right.
So
Jordan Love.
Right. Well, it'll be Blake Bortles, but yes, same premise. It's going to be a little bit of a problem, but as the commissioner, you've now set the precedent. And so nobody can complain to you about this when it happens in the future.
It is part of the game, right? Rebuilding in dynasty. That's part of it. Theoretically, it's something everybody should do at some point if you've been in a dynasty league long enough.
Yes, just make sure you get multiple first round picks for Derrick Henry. All right, let's go. Let's move on now to some ADP conversation, continuing that talk. And so let's look at the quarterbacks here. So Heath, your favorite quarterback based on ADP is Taysom Hill. Again, he is the 30th quarterback off the board, going 193 overall. You can listen to the start of the show for that conversation about Taysom Hill. But Dave, your favorite quarterback based on ADP is Trevor Lawrence, who is the 15th quarterback off the board, number 89 overall. Tell us why you like that value.
He's actually gone up since I looked at it. He was right around 100th overall when I looked at the ADP value. And I don't love any quarterback's value. I mentioned it earlier. It felt like all the quarterbacks were getting pushed up in ADP. I'm still looking for some sort of value, especially if I can get one of the first six or seven quarterbacks in my rankings. I want to get them at a good value. I can do that in our analyst drafts because everybody's just waiting on a quarterback. But it's different when you're drafting with people who are in competitive leagues, who value the quarterback position a little bit more. Lawrence, I think, has a chance to have a really nice first season. I like the value of getting him outside of the top 12. Closer to 100th overall would be a little bit better, but polished rookie quarterback in a system that he's going to know from the jump. Offensive line isn't that horrible. They're going to be in a lot of competitive games. They're going to play from behind. The running back that they drafted, they are now grooming to catch a lot of passes. That means fewer rush attempts overall. That means more opportunities for Lawrence. And he's also a threat inside the five-yard line. He can run it in, had a bunch of rushing touchdowns at Clemson. I'm sure he's going to have a chance to run in the pros as well. So I like the value. I think he does have a chance to finish top 15, maybe top 12 overall in quarterback this season.
He's going to surprise some people with his rushing. Ran for nearly 1,000 yards over his three seasons as the starter in Clemson. Some guys that he's going behind, and again, you could debate this, Ryan Tannehill, well, I'll start at 10, Matthew Stafford at 10, Jalen Hurts at 11, Ryan Tannehill 12, Joe Burrow 13, Matt Ryan at 14. So some young quarterbacks, some second-year guys in Hurts and Burrow, obviously some veteran guys in Stafford, Tannehill, and Ryan, and then Lawrence going ahead of Kirk Cousins, Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield, Carson Wentz. So Watson would be the outlier there, not knowing if he's going to play or not, or where he's going to play if he does play in 2021. Heath, just a real quick question to wrap up quarterbacks here. Aaron Rodgers is the 7th quarterback off the board, going right around 57th overall. Do you think his value will change if he's traded to, let's say, Denver, maybe the Raiders? Is that going to be a good spot for Rodgers still, or do you think it's going to be too soon if he leaves the Packers?
Yeah, I mean, if he goes to the Broncos, they have enough weapons. First off, I can't see him going up from there. It seems like the six in front of him need to be in front of him. I actually have him a little lower than 7. I can't see the Broncos negatively affecting it. I don't think the 49ers, if somehow Trey Lance becomes a Packer, I can't see that affecting Rodgers' value. The Raiders might drop him down a little bit. I think the risk where Aaron Rodgers' value could really fall is if we get to August and he's still a Packer and he's still saying he's not going to play for the Packers. And at that point, he kind of gets into that Deshaun Watson range. Like, is there a chance that Aaron Rodgers is actually just not going to play for the Packers?
Right, but the question would become, is he going to play at all? And, you know, I don't think he's going to retire or, you know, step away from the game as much as Jeopardy may be a calling for him. I still see him playing in 2021, so it ends up being a good value pick to take Aaron Rodgers the later that he falls, because he still is going to put up numbers, whether he puts up great numbers, number one overall quarterback like we saw last year, probably not going to happen, but still could be a top 10 guy wherever he plays. And so that's the gamble that you're taking, and hopefully he ends up in a good spot if, in fact, he does leave the Packers. All right, let's move on now from quarterbacks to running backs. Again, we're looking at the NFC ADP as of May. And so what we're going to do is take a look at one early round guy that you like, one mid round guy that you like, and one late round guy that you like. The early rounds would be rounds 1 through 3, mid rounds 4 through 8, and late rounds 9 and later. So, Keith, your early round guy that you like is Aaron Jones, 13th overall. And that kind of ties in the Aaron Rodgers conversation. Jones is a little bit of a wild card right now because you don't know if Rodgers is gone. If it is Jordan Love, God forbid it's Blake Bortles, but it could be a different quarterback for the Packers. How much do you think that's going to impact the ADP for Aaron Jones?
Honestly, I feel like he's being drafted right now where I would probably rank him if Aaron Rodgers was gone. Like, we're talking about a running back who 2 years ago finished number 2 and last year finished number 5 in 14 games. He's, in my opinion, if Rodgers like signed, sealed, delivered, he's in the argument for a top 3 or 4 pick. So the fact that he's the 11th running back or the 10th running back being drafted right now, I love that. And I wouldn't feel as good about it. I wouldn't feel like it was a value if Rodgers left, but I don't think there's a lot of risk here. Even if Rodgers is gone, I think he's going to be a borderline number one running back, especially with Jamal Williams gone. AJ Dillon could definitely take a little bit of short yardage work, but I mean,
what is he going to score 12 touchdowns instead of 15 or 20 this year? And AJ Dillon's not going to take the passing work that Jamal Williams was. So I think that there's more upside than downside at this cost for Jones, even with the uncertainty about Aaron Rodgers.
All right.
But
so
if we knew that Aaron Rodgers was going to go, where would you feel comfortable drafting Aaron Jones? Heath, you've made it clear you think he's still like right on the fence between a first and a second round pick. I'm not so sure. I think having Aaron Rodgers, there is a huge advantage for Aaron Jones. And if the downgrade is to Jordan Love, Blake Bortles, Drew Lock, I'm like ready to puke right now just thinking about it. I think it's going to be a nightmare for whoever's running the ball for them, and they'll become a run first team. But
Melvin Gordon was a top 13 back with Drew Lock.
Yeah, but he was also like horribly inconsistent. Like it was terrible the way that he was putting his numbers together. Yes, he finished as an RB13. He also played a bunch of games, and I would be nervous to take Jones certainly with a top 10 pick if Aaron Rodgers isn't there. I might think about it around the swing turn at the end of round one, beginning of round two. But honestly, I think I'm looking at round two, like middle round two. I'm kind of hoping that I'm just in every draft with you, Heath, and you take Jones before I have to think about it.
Well, let's put this in context of the guys he's going around and see if you like Jones better or worse than these guys. So he's going right now after Ezekiel Elliott, Nick Chubb, Cam Akers. So Heath, are you taking Jones ahead of those guys now? And then
take
does that
him
change
ahead of them now? Yes.
And then if Rodgers is gone, do those guys go ahead of him?
I would say I'd probably still have him ahead of Chubb in full PPR. I'd have him behind the other two. And in non-PPR, I'd have him behind all three.
Okay, so behind all three. And then Chubb and PPR. So Dave, the guys going after Aaron Jones, Austin Eckler, DeAndre Swift, Antonio Gibson, J.K. Dobbins. You can take those guys over Jones if there's no Aaron Rodgers there?
I will probably take Jones ahead of Dobbins. And I'd have to really think about Gibson versus Jones. But the other two that you said, I'm absolutely taking ahead of Aaron Jones.
All right, so Austin Eckler, DeAndre Swift. I'm taking Eckler over Jones now. So I would continue to do that. It'd be an interesting call to see. And I mean, obviously, look, it's going to depend on what the quarterback that comes back in return. It could be Drew Lock. It could be Teddy Bridgewater, for all we know, if they just want to have a veteran that, you know, has some.
That might be the best case scenario.
Some semblance of knowing what he's doing. And again, that's assuming it's the Broncos. Could be Derek Carr if it's the Raiders, you know. So we just don't know where the trade will end up happening if a trade does happen. So, Dave, your favorite early round pick is Travis Etienne. He's going 38th overall, the 22nd running back off the board.
I'm excited about how he fits into Jacksonville, just like I'm excited about how Trevor Lawrence fits into Jacksonville. I know he's not going to be the every down guy. Certainly won't start the season that way. I think to start the season, we might be lucky if he gets 9 carries a game, but I think he could also end up getting 4 or 5 catches per game. He was great in space at Clemson. They're going to put him in space now. Urban Meyer has just gone crazy talking about explosiveness in the offense. You look at Jacksonville's offense from last year, where was the explosiveness? There wasn't a lot of it. I think he can get it out of DJ Chark. I think he can probably get something out of LaVisca. I'm not sure LaVisca is going to get a huge role, but to spend the draft capital that they did to get Travis Etienne tells you exactly what they were looking for. And it's that big playability, find ways to get him the ball in space. You're drafting him as a low end number two fantasy running back. And I think that just he can return at least that value, if not be a little bit better than that, as a top 20-ish type of running back by the end of the season.
Running backs going ahead of Travis Etienne. And again, this is changing as we speak, I'm sure. So James Robinson still going ahead of him at number 19 overall.
That's ridiculous.
Reflective of the post-NFL draft movement that we've seen in most of the drafts that we've done and drafts that we've been made aware of. Josh Jacobs, number 20, David Montgomery, 21. So it's really more Jacobs, Montgomery, and the comparison between Etienne and those guys, the guys going after Travis Etienne, Chris Carson, Kareem Hunt, Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, Chase Edmonds. So that's the range for him. I think Jacobs, Montgomery, Carson, those are the running backs you'll see going around Travis Etienne. Dave, obviously very excited about the ADP of the Jaguars. He's going to tell you in a little bit about DJ Chark, LaVisca Chenault, and obviously why you should be taking Tim Tebow.
Yes, of course, Tebow.
At the tight end.
Did Tebow make your top 200?
No.
What? He absolutely made mine.
He's not making the team.
I put him right at 200. Just
you get
fun.
Preseason stats.
All right, mid round running backs that we're looking at.
I did put him at 200.
Speed this up a little bit. So mid round running backs that we're looking at here. Heath, your favorite guy that you saw is Mike Davis at 105 overall, the 35th running back off the board. Dave, your favorite is Leonard Fournette at 76 overall, the 31st running back off the board. So Heath, first word to you, Mike Davis. What do you like about his ADP at that spot?
Well, and we should clarify that that's another one that's changed a lot. He's already up to the number 27 running back. So I still like him as the number 27 running back. I don't, but there's no one currently on this roster who is a challenge. Like Cordero Patterson is a kick returner. When he's anyone has played him at running back, he'll have one or two good runs a year and average 3 yards per carry the rest of the time. That there's a little bit of steam around Javian Hawkins now, who I think might actually be lighter than Rondale Moore, like 175 pounds or something. He's not going to be a running back that takes a bunch of touches away from Mike Davis. Kadri Allison's not going to do it. So unless, like, there's still some danger that somebody gets cut, like a Kerryon Johnson situation, and the Falcons actually get him, but they didn't do that with Kerryon Johnson. I think Mike Davis is going to get 15 touches a game, and his thighs are enormous, clearly gearing up for a big workload. He might just, like, we might be overthinking it. He might just be a top 15 running back this year.
He was very good, obviously, in the 13 games. He got a chance for extended action with Christian McCaffrey out last year for the Panthers. It's just a matter of, can he do that with a full workload behind, you know, good to decent offensive line? Obviously, there's not going to be a lot of teams worried about the run game when you're playing the Falcons. If they hold on to Julio Jones, there's some news about, you know, Jones now may be available for a second round pick. So that's something you want to keep an eye on if Jones is traded. But Mike Davis, if he's anywhere after, I think, the top 25 backs, it's a good value pick based on what his opportunity and volume could be for the Falcons. Dave, your guys, Leonard Fournette and Bruce Arians, said over the weekend that he's still going to be Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones splitting most of the work. When you factor in Giovanni Bernard now being on the roster and what Tom Brady has typically done with pass-catching running backs like Gio, does that scare you off Fournette, or is the value at the 31st running back spot still too good to pass up?
It's the value, because I think Fournette is good enough to be a low-end number two fantasy running back to begin the season. I think the Bucs will use him first, the way that he finished last year, as long as his training camp is okay, he doesn't get hurt in camp, looks okay in the preseason. Something happened to him toward the end of the season where he had to buy back into the offense, and he did, and he got a good opportunity, and he ran with it through the playoffs. You could have made a case that he was the Super Bowl MVP. And he's a better pass catcher than Ronald Jones. So if they want to go into like a no-huddle type of an offense, maybe it's Fournette in there instead of Giovanni Bernard. That depends on how quickly Bernard adapts to the offense. Ultimately, I think Bernard's going to play in passing situations. But I think Fournette probably has the coach's confidence to handle anything, especially when Brady checks out of a run and goes into a pass. And they either need the running back to protect Brady when he does that or be available to catch the ball. And those are two things that Ronald Jones just has never been able to come around on. And so he's a limited running back who's got that explosiveness. Those types of running backs rarely get 15 carries week in and week out. I think Fournette's the better one of the two to draft. I'm not saying to target him, but if you're going to go after other positions early on, I like the value of getting Leonard Fournette at that point in the draft.
So Fournette, based on the ADP we're talking about, I know, Heath, you said it's changed, but we'll still factor that in. So Mike Davis right now going a few spots ahead of Leonard Fournette. Again, the ADP we're looking at, Davis is behind. You'd rather have Davis or Fournette, Heath?
I'd much rather have Davis.
Dave, you're in the same camp. Okay, so taking Davis as well. All right, so we'll see how the Bucks backfield looks as we get closer to the start of the season. Then just quickly want to mention the two late round guys that you guys have. Jamal Williams for Heath is at 136th overall, the 47th running back off the board. Dave, you got James Conner at 118 overall, RB43. Just quickly, so Heath, I'm sure you guys have touched on this. I wasn't on the show with you guys, whichever combination of you it was. The comments from Anthony Lynn about DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams, does that solidify that this is a good pick in this round, or does it make you a little bit more skittish about Swift?
No, I mean, he said he's going to give Swift 18 touches a game and that Jamal Williams is his A-back. So that makes perfect sense. I don't know what the confusion is. I think you look at what he did, and there was always one running back that averaged at least 17 touches for Anthony Lynn. And there was always a second running back that was getting 10 to 14 touches. And the way they could do that is they give their running backs more touches than any other team. And I just anticipate that's going to continue. So I think Swift can be a number one running back, and Williams can be a very good flex in PPR.
Plus, he's a good player.
For those people concerned about DeAndre Swift, because he's in that group, as we talked about, with Aaron Jones and Cam Akers and Antonio Gibson and Dobbins, depending on the format, you know, would you recommend passing on Swift if you're in that boat and just trying to target Jamal Williams in this range?
I wouldn't, because I think DeAndre Swift, if he,
but if shows, you, I guess what I'm getting is, if you want a piece of the Detroit backfield,
which everybody's clamoring for,
I would like to take Swift in round two. But if you miss Swift, I'd love taking Williams in round 10.
All right. And then Dave, your guy, James Conner, how do you see this backfield shaking out by the time we get to August?
Well, if Conner can stay upright throughout training camp, my guess is that he'll be the A running back who gets 12 to 9 touches a game. Just, again, confusing. I think Edmonds is going to get that opportunity to be the primary running back for Arizona. He's certainly the better option as far as pass catching goes. But they use Kenyon Drake as a bull rusher, north-south guy, certainly near the goal line. He had the chance to get a lot of touchdowns. I think that's where Conner fits in. And I think a lot of people are kind of overreacting to Conner's last season. And honestly, just the track record of injuries that he's had. And they figure it's going to happen again. Cardinals' offensive line got better. The team needs to do a little bit better running the football. They might want to take some pressure off of Kyler Murray after he got hurt late last season. Conner can fit into a role that could give him some touchdown potential every single week. It doesn't matter who they play, because when they get inside the five, inside the three, they can just hand it to him, let him plow for a touchdown. You're not looking for a ton of points from James Conner. You're not expecting him to go back to being the guy that he was. But what if he did? There's a chance that he could. If he stays healthy, if Edmonds can't get the job done, this is a running back who averaged over three catches per game in 2019 and 2018. So he's got some upside, and you're getting him to close to the end of round 10. It's hard to find running backs that have some upside by that point.
I love this, and I just want to clarify, like, we all view Chase Edmonds as a better pass-catching running back than James Conner. James Conner has been far more efficient as a pass-catching running back than Chase Edmonds.
Conner was 5 of 6 in goal-to-go situations last year. Chase Edmonds was 0 for 1. It was his first and only carry inside the 5 in the NFL last year. Or ever, like, in his career. It came last year. He went backwards. So Conner is going to lock up that role.
Chase Edmonds, when he surprised us, has been very good as a fantasy asset. When we had expectations for him, and we're going back to that game against the Dolphins last year when he had, I think it was almost 25 total touches. He had 70 yards rushing. It was just a miserable performance. I think it was week 9 when he stepped in for an injured Kenyon Drake. It was just a terrible, terrible starting job for him. But he did say on Friday in a story published on the Cardinals team website, "I'm going to go out there and I'm going to ball out this year. It's now or never. I may not be your typical 20 carry guy. Not every running back is a 20 carry guy, but I believe I'm certainly capable of being a 20 touch type of guy." And so he said that, also said, might not see him at the end of game since James Conner could be in there. So it'd be an interesting, you know, split backfield that you may be considering avoiding, but at the right value, and Conner's value is incredible. Not a bad idea to take a chance on him. And Adam Azer, I think, has waffled on this a little bit. He originally said that he was going to take Conner over Edmonds. I think he did so in one draft. I think he's come back around to taking Edmonds first based on the ceiling, but Conner based on the floor might be a little bit better. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to get into wide receivers and tight ends based on their ADP.
What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features, like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads, ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
And we're back. All right, let's take a look at the wide receiver ADP here. Again, we're looking at some players that we like early round 1 through 3, mid round 4 through 8, and late round 9 plus. This is the NFC ADP as of the middle of May. So Heath, your early round guy is AJ Brown, 26th overall. Dave, your early round guy is Mike Evans, 41st overall. I don't know how much time we need to spend on AJ Brown and what the upside is for him, but you just like getting him in the beginning of the third round, right, Heath?
Yeah, I think in a half PPR or non-PPR league, he's got an argument for the number three wide receiver. He's been remarkably efficient his first 2 years in the league. Now Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith are gone, and they didn't do very – like, I love Josh Reynolds. They didn't do much to replace them. So there's a chance he makes the leap to that 130-target territory and legitimately finishes as a top five wide receiver this year.
Yeah, love the upside for A.J. Brown, just soaking up targets from Ryan Tannehill. And if something happens to Derrick Henry, or if – the change from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing opens up some more passing attempts, there could be just a world of opportunity for A.J. Brown to dominate. He's going after Justin Jefferson, which I think is going to be an interesting comparison. You know, the second-year receiver versus the third-year receiver, but he's going ahead of Michael Thomas, ahead of Keenan Allen. And I think we all have A.J. Brown ranked in our top five. So that's
can I break in on something here, Jamie?
Sure.
On Undisputed, Shannon Sharp called Julio Jones live on the air, and Julio said he's, quote, out of there when asked if he wants to stay in Atlanta. And he also said he doesn't want to go to the Cowboys. He said, quote, I want to win. So Julio Jones kind of giving away the Falcons' leverage here by saying that he's out of Atlanta.
I mean, you know,
it's going to a different team. It's going to change in Atlanta now.
I think that's why you're hearing maybe a second round pick is certainly in the conversation as opposed to a first round pick, because they are losing the leverage. They also are past the NFL draft.
They're so pulling a Heath. They don't want to get caught with an old player on their team, and they got to take whatever they can get.
An old player on their team. I believe it was Albert Breer reported in his Monday Morning Quarterback that New England could be in the mix for Julio Jones. That would be interesting if he ends up there. That would not be good for his fantasy value, but we'll see where Julio – I'm sorry, it was Mike Giraldi of the NFL Network said that the Patriots have had discussions about Julio Jones. So he could be on the move soon. June 1st is certainly a deadline that – we'll be keeping an eye on. So, Dave, you got Mike Evans as the receiver that you like. Here's the 13th receiver off the board, 41st overall. Evans wasn't particularly great last year aside from the touchdowns, but the touchdowns were fantastic double-digit touchdowns. And he suffered a little bit when Antonio Brown was brought in and got up to speed. So you think this is still good value for Evans as the 13th receiver off the board?
I think it's still pretty good value. We're still talking about a receiver that can lock up 1,000 yards pretty much every season. He has done it every season, and he caught a lot of touchdowns last year. He wasn't healthy. He wasn't at 100%. So if he's healthy this year, and he's still going to be that red zone target for Tom Brady and a Bucs downfield passing attack, I don't see a ton of downside. We've got a year of evidence now. I'm not convinced that Chris Godwin's going to take a ton of work away from Mike Evans. I think he can still be good. 13th wide receiver is pretty high. I think close to that is good, but there weren't a lot of receivers that I loved at the ADP. I think he's one that if you're going to wait a little bit on wide receiver, we've talked about this, you load up on running backs and or a tight end with your first three picks. If Evans is there in round four, you pounce.
He's going ahead of Chris Godwin, for now Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Robert Woods, this whole group of receivers that, you know, you've heard me say time and time again, once you get probably like receiver 10, 10 through 30 can almost be very similar in what their production could be. The names are different. Heath, I know you don't have Mike Evans ranked this high, and I'm sure you don't love this ADP for Evans at 13.
It just scares me to death because Antonio Brown led this team in catches per game last year, which is ridiculous. Chris Godwin was second on the team in catches per game. Evans was a catch behind both of them. And we know, like we said with Claypool, he's not going to score touchdowns like he did last year. I think the past two times that he scored double-digit touchdowns, he had like four the next season, maybe five. And so I do think there's quite a bit of risk. He'd probably get to 1,000 yards because if he plays 17 games, but 1,000 yards is not the marker for a top 13 wide receiver. I've got concerns. He's closer to 25 than he is to 13 for me.
You bring back OJ Howard, you bring in Giovanni Bernard. You know, we don't know how many targets he'll get on a week to week basis. It does feel a little bit high for me as well. So Mike Evans for Dave, it is his favorite early round ADP guy, 41st overall, 13th wide receiver off the board. Let's go to the mid-round wide receivers. And again, this is in the rounds 4 through 8 range. We already got Dave's guy you can listen to at the start of the show. Chase Claypool is his favorite player in this range, 66th overall, the 27th receiver off the board. For you, Heath, it's Robbie Anderson, who is going 88th overall, the 35th receiver off the board. And this is an interesting team because they changed quarterbacks in terms of the Panthers. Sam Darnold stepping in for Teddy Bridgewater. They replaced Curtis Samuel with Terrace Marshall. So we'll see if there's a little redundancy there between Anderson and Marshall. Obviously, there wasn't that same concern with Samuel and Anderson. And obviously, Christian McCaffrey back as well. The hope would be he's playing more than three games. So Anderson's still a good selection here, 35th receiver off the board.
Yeah, because if you expected him to repeat what he did last year, you would also expect him to score a couple more touchdowns, and we'd be looking at a top 15 wide receiver. So he can lose a little bit of volume from last year. And I think the McCaffrey thing, it's possible to overstate that just because last year, it's not like when McCaffrey was out, they just abandoned their running backs in the passing game. They still threw it to Mike Davis a ton when McCaffrey was out. So I think there's a small step back for Anderson in terms of catches and yards per game from what we saw last year. But I do expect him to score at a higher rate. And he's got the double familiarity bonus now. He's got the college coach and the prior quarterback situation going. So he had to get all the targets.
All right. So Anderson, again, 35th receiver off the board, going around 91st overall. Interesting, some of the guys he's going ahead of. Devontae Smith, who, you know, you could debate rookie receiver, but could lead his team in targets. Jerry Jeudy, right after that. Deebo Samuel, Curtis Samuel, LaVisca Chenault, Marquise Brown, and another guy we're going to talk about in a second is Brandon Cooks. And the guys that Anderson's going behind, Will Fuller, Cortland Sutton, Odell Beckham, Tyler Boyd. To me, Sutton is one of the best values based on ADP as the 33rd receiver off the board, 85th overall for him. So there's the receivers in the range of Robbie Anderson. All right, let's move on now to the late round picks at wide receiver, the late round ADP based on NFC. And we got Brandon Cooks for Heath at 104 overall, the 42nd receiver off the board. And Dave, you got Elijah Moore, 201st overall, the 72nd receiver off the board. So both these guys are interesting because there are still moves that can happen that can impact them. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with Brandon Cooks' quarterback situation with Deshaun Watson status up in the air. And for Elijah Moore, if Jameson Crowder is gone, that will certainly help his outlook and help his upside. So Keith, start with Brandon Cooks. How much of the Deshaun Watson situation do you factor in here when looking at the ADP?
Well, I think like when you look at Watson's ADP, we talked about it. He's the 20th quarterback off the board now. Like it's almost as if we're drafting all Texans as if Deshaun Watson's already off the team. And maybe he won't be on the team, but it's hard. I don't know. I don't think we know that Deshaun Watson's not going to play any games for the Houston Texans this year. And then the other thing is they've made some additions in the offseason that at least provide some semblance of a possibility of having quarterback play if Deshaun Watson is gone. Not to mention they could trade him for another quarterback, but Tyrod Taylor is there. I like Davis Mills. I think he's got a good opportunity. So I don't think the risk is very much at all as the number 42 wide receiver, because if Cooks was there with Watson and this current receiving core and we didn't have concerns about Watson, I'd have Cooks in my top 15.
Right. So steal if Watson plays. Good value if Watson is not there, just based on what the target share will be, opportunity will be. Like you said, there was a report over the weekend, they're expecting Nico Collins, their rookie that they drafted in the third round, to play a significant role, which makes sense when you look at the rest of the receivers on this team. The Texans kind of look like your dynasty roster. They have one good player and a lot of junk surrounded by it, and that's not factoring in if Deshaun Watson does play. Dave, your guy with Elijah Moore, 72nd overall, how much do you think his ADP will rise if Jameson Crowder's released or traded as expected June 1st?
It'll go up quite a bit. He'll be in the top 120 for sure. Maybe right around where Cooks is right now, right around 100th overall. But this receiver, to me, profiles as the perfect type of target for Zach Wilson. Someone who can work the short to mid-range passing game, knows how to get open, has good burst, has good route running skills, has good hands, and can just be open and available for Zach Wilson, who himself will move around the pocket and out of the pocket. There's going to be a lot of play action bootlegs there in New York if that offense is anything like it was in San Francisco. And it might not take more long to be the number one guy there, but Crowder's got to go for that to happen. But even if Crowder's there, Moore did have some experience lining up outside, and he could do that. And he's got some nice potential. And this is 200th overall, the 72nd receiver off the board. It's egregious. He's much better than this. This is an easy, no-brainer, late-round receiver.
I think a lot of it that we see with the Jets is Jets bias over them not being a very good team the last several years.
That's still going to be the case.
Being bad.
Yeah,
receiving core being bad. So we'll see. You know, Denzel Mims was probably drafted in this range as well and didn't exactly produce at a high level. So they have a lot of moving parts with this team. But I think you're right, Dave. At this spot, it's certainly worth gambling. And this is why you do drafts now if you are doing any best ball drafts, because you're taking advantage of some of these opportunities of what Elijah Moore could be once Jameson Crowder is gone and hopefully Zach Wilson is up to speed. I think it is also interesting, you know, to tie in our rookie conversation as well before we move on to tight ends, is once you get past Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle, clearly Ja'Marr Chase being the first wide receiver, you really have a lot of debate, I think people should at least, over who the next receiver should be, whether it is Terrace Marshall, Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, Kadarius Toney, Elijah Moore. All those guys, I think, are in that next tier, and any of them could be better than the next one. You know, so just looking at what their opportunity is and what their scenarios could be. And so in our draft, it went Marshall, Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, Kadarius Toney, Elijah Moore. Heath didn't have to really make the tough choice because he took Toney and Moore, so has the latter two of that group. So it's going to be fun to see how those guys all compete with each other looking at this rookie class for wide receivers. All right, after a season full of drama and excitement, a Europa League champion will be crowned on Wednesday, May 26th. European juggernauts Manchester United are looking to make room in their crowded trophy cabinet for yet another addition. Meanwhile, Spain's Villarreal are competing in their first ever European final as they look to write their name in the history books and secure a spot in next season's Champions League. You can watch the match via Paramount Plus in the CBS Sports app. And for those of you wondering about the Champions League final on Saturday, yep, you can watch it in the same way via Paramount Plus in the CBS Sports app. Watch the Champions League final on Saturday, as well as the match between Manchester United and Spain's Villarreal on Wednesday, May 26th in the Paramount Plus via Paramount Plus in the CBS Sports app. The CBS Sports app is fantastic. Paramount Plus is fantastic. You really enjoy all the soccer action. So make sure you check it out. Again, it's Wednesday, May 26th for the Europa League champion tournament as it continues to go on. Manchester United versus Spain's Villarreal. Let's move on now to the tight ends. And Dave, your favorite selection here based on ADP, my favorite selection as well. One of the guys I'm really excited about, TJ Hockenson. He's going as the fifth tight end off the board, 72nd overall. Heath, your favorite guy is Mark Andrews, and this is a scenario we're going to debate, I'm sure, a lot. He's the fourth tight end off the board, 64th overall. So I'll let you guys go head-to-head, Hockenson versus Andrews. Dave, you get first word.
I don't have a problem with taking Andrews in a draft, especially when it's eight picks ahead of Hockenson, but I kind of look at those two similarly. I think they're both going to be in a position to get a lot of touchdowns this year. I think Hockenson might get more targets and catches just by the nature of what that offense looks like in Detroit. Whereas Baltimore has added some pieces to their passing game, Rashad Bateman, Sammy Watkins, obviously the top two, and they got some good numbers out of Marquise Brown toward the end of last season. Hockenson should be available, and we know that Jared Goff, A, doesn't like to throw deep, and whether he's tasked to do it or not, I think he'll be shy about it. B, a lot of his best games the last two seasons came when one of his tight ends was heavily involved. And I just don't think the Lions have enough choices in the passing game to get away from using Hockenson. He's a tough matchup for defenses. I could see him being very, very good this year. Outside shot of being a top three fantasy tight end? Yeah, I think there is an outside shot of it, but a much more realistic shot of him being the fourth best tight end. And when you're drafting him as the fifth tight end off the board with the last pick of round six, I think that's excellent value for a tight end position that half your fantasy league is going to be stinking at all year long.
Man, I think we've had this conversation like seven times already this offseason.
There's going to be a lot more. It's coming.
I didn't hear it yet. So I'll just like the thing that differentiates it for me, and I've said it before, it's that we've seen Mark Andrews be really good already. On a yards per target basis, he's been eight or better every single year. TJ Hockenson's at 6.8 for his career. We've seen him score, have the double-digit touchdown season. We've seen him earn a 25% target share. I did pull back on Andrews just a little bit with the effort that the Ravens made at wide receiver in the draft, because there's a chance that Bateman comes in and does what Marquise Brown couldn't do. But for the most part, I just think Mark Andrews is the number one pass catcher on the Ravens. Hockenson might be the number one pass catcher on the Lions as well, but I don't think that the cast that he has around him this year is so much different than what he had once Kenny Golladay got hurt last year.
I think it's worse.
Interesting. Well, I think it's worse.
And the quarterback is obviously worse.
Yeah, I think the quarterback situation matters. And if you want some more interesting numbers on what TJ Hockenson could be looking at with Jared Goff, go back and listen to our episode from last Monday with Jacob Gibbs, who broke down the targets per route run for both Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett with Jared Goff, and how much Goff targeted those guys when they were actually out running routes as opposed to blocking. And we know Hockenson's going to be running a lot more routes than probably what Higbee and Everett did combined. I come out on this. I like Hockenson better than Andrews. I just think this is going to be his breakout season. It's not I think we have these conversations. I know I get accused of this a lot, that I don't like Andrews. That's not the case. I like Andrews.
You like them both, right?
It's a very, very obvious thing that sure. We like Andrews. We like Hockenson. It's not a dislike of the other. They're both top five tight ends for all of us. It's just looking at who we particularly like better. For me, I like Hockenson slightly better than Andrews.
Does Pitts jump ahead of either of them for you guys if Julio's not in Atlanta anymore?
He will not, no.
No.
I don't think he will for me either, but you've got to imagine at this point that Pitts has 100 targets. Oh, yeah, he will in ADP. But I think the door's open for him to get 100 targets now. Not sure it was there before.
All right, so we'll see how that comes out. And just to wrap this up on the tight end conversation, a couple other guys that you like a little bit later. For Keith, it is Blake Jarwin going as the 23rd tight end off the board, 177th overall. And for Dave, it's Jonnu Smith going as the 16th tight end off the board, 134th overall. So we get some questions, obviously more so about the Patriots tight ends. Who's the better of the two? Dave, you're going with Jonnu over Hunter Henry as the better Patriots tight end this year?
Absolutely. He's more explosive. He's more athletic. They're both athletic, obviously. But I think Jonnu Smith is going to get used a lot more as a wide receiver type of tight end, a mismatch piece than Hunter Henry will. And I think he'll see more targets on a per game basis than Hunter Henry will.
I just shrug because it seems so weird. As long as both of these guys have been in the NFL and as good as Henry has been at earning targets and producing when he's been healthy versus what Jonnu Smith has not done. But the Patriots did act as if they value Jonnu Smith more than Hunter Henry. So I think that might be right. I'm just avoiding both. I'm not drafting either as a tight end. And
I don't mind stashing either one with a pick after 120th overall.
I think if you're taking a flyer on a second tight end, it's not bad to take whichever of the Patriots tight ends that you like. And it's funny you say that, Keith, the way that you framed it, because what if they had signed Henry first? You know, if the transactions were reversed, that Henry went ahead of Jonnu in terms of how the contracts were signed. I just think it's going to be frustrating with the quarterback being what it is, quarterback situation being what it is, because, you know, Cam's going to run so much and they're going to be a run heavy team that the targets aren't going to be there for either of these two guys. They're going to cannibalize each other. So I just stay away from them as well. But at this point in the draft, it's not a bad gamble on either one, depending on who you like better. I think Jonnu does have a little bit higher ceiling, but certainly Hunter Henry has proven he has the higher floor. And then we do get some questions, Heath, at least I know I do, about Dalton Schultz versus Blake Jarwin, because Jarwin coming back from the ACL and Schultz playing the way that he did last year. I think Jarwin steps back into the lead role. I'm sure you do as well, based on your suggestion here. Do you see Jarwin maybe living up to the potential that he had going into last year when, for me at least, he was a breakout candidate? I know we all liked him as a potential sleeper, at least, or a guy that can make a contribution to the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think earlier in the offseason, I was more in the camp of we don't know who's going to win this battle, and so I'm treating it like a lesser version of Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry and just not drafting either one. But there was a quote, and I don't have it here, not like a month ago, from Dak specifically about Blake Jarwin. I haven't heard Dak talking up Dalton Schultz over the offseason, and the contracts are not comparable. They paid Blake Jarwin like a starting tight end. It sounds like he's getting healthy and expected to be ready, so I'm just going to treat Blake Jarwin like their starting tight end. I don't think it'll be much of a competition.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, but I just hope that's the way it plays out, because I love the upside of Jarwin, and I was really upset with his knee injury last year. Didn't really matter after Dak got hurt, because who knows if he would have lived up to the expectations, but Dalton Schultz did play well when he got that opportunity to step in for Blake Jarwin. So there's our look at the May NFC ADP. We obviously talk about the NFC ADP a lot, and we'll start to get into the CBS Sports ADP as well as more drafts are happening. So we can encourage you to take advantage of our mock draft product as well. But for those of you doing your best ball drafts and any of your rookie-only drafts, that's going to impact a lot of the ADP that we talk about throughout the course of the summer leading up to the start of when real drafts happen. So hopefully you enjoyed a little bit of that conversation about the NFC ADP. We know we didn't get to any of your emails, but we're going to have an entire show dedicated to your Apple Podcast review questions on Thursday. So please leave us a review on your Apple Podcast. Include your name, your question. We'll read it on the show. And we'll certainly answer those questions throughout the course of the week. And again, we have our Show for you tomorrow will be live on the FF Today, Fantasy Football Today YouTube page. That'll be 7 o'clock Eastern. That'll be Heath, Adam, and Chris. And you can find out what Heath had for dinner at 4:30 with his early bird special. So Adam will be back with our next show after he recovers from the Hawks beating the Knicks. And maybe the Knicks are able to even up the series at 1-1. So great job, Dave. Great job, Heath. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. We appreciate it. And make sure you check out our next show here on Fantasy Football Today.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.